Fragile. It must be Italian.
Well, I think that says fragile, honey.
Oh, yeah.
Live from the place where whenever anyone mentions international, we all think we're headed out for pancakes, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, basement dwellers. We're headed international today, and I don't mean that we're getting five kinds of syrup served by the nice neighbor lady who lives down the block. Nope. On today's show, we welcome Chief Global Investment Strategist at Charles Schwab, Jeffrey Kleintop. Also, headlines about diversifying your investments, news about a major brokerage firm kicking commission IRAs to the curb, a call from Patrick about his sugar mama, plus your letters, my trivia, and more. And here they are, two guys who think the term emerging market refers to the Asian grocery that just opened up downtown. It's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
That's an emerging market.
I'd like to give me some fried wontons.
Mm, oh, my goodness. I'm so. Why do you
rub your chest when you talk about food? I don't get it. I just don't get it. It's like, I get the stomach rubbing, but like up here, it just seems really weird and awkward.
I just like the fact you think it's creepy. Hey, everybody. I'm Joe Salci, Average Joe Money on Twitter. We are on day like 11 of my voice attempting to recover and not quite making it. So,
well, I've got my theory on that, and I shared it with you privately.
And it wasn't funny.
Probably should try some lemon water or honey water.
I'll tell you what, I got to try something. But you know what's great is when people try heading to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. Because when you head to Magnify Money, you don't even need your voice, OG. You know why? Because all the deals are on the screen in front of you. The average person saves about $450 when they find out that that checking account could be better. The savings account could be much better. But more than that, especially, you know how much money you pay on interest in your debt? You pay a ton of money. Why not be the CFO of your company? Think of your family as a company, be the CFO, rearrange that debt to save a bunch of money on interest by finding the place with the least fine print, lowest interest rates. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money is going to show you that. And a place when it comes to marketplace lenders that's always ranked number one over at Magnify Money is SoFi. You spell that S-O-F-I. So you got to check them out too, because not only do they have very little fine print, but also, when you find out what low rate they have for you, they're going to throw in an extra $100 because you use their link, which if you apply that to the loan, makes that interest even less. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. If you're looking at your student loans or personal loans, they also do mortgages. You don't get $100 for the mortgage. That's against the mortgage rules, so they can't do that. But they'll hook you up otherwise, OG, if you use that link. Jeffrey Kleintop is here from Charles Schwab. We're expecting a call from him imminently on the shortwave, OG. So that'll be exciting. But first, we got some crazy headlines about a brokerage firm doing something nutty.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from financialplanning.com. Merrill Lynch. It says Merrill's fiduciary plan, commission-based IRAs will be phased out. Seems, OG, that Merrill Lynch has said, you know what? Because of this Department of Labor ruling around fiduciary responsibility, we are no longer going to have commission IRAs.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going to be phased out. When I read the article, it says April 10th, that's it. Well, that's more commissions.
It's a quick phase, huh?
Yeah. The phase is April 9th or April 10th. It's a one-day phase.
Merrill says it's embracing the rule as a positive development for clients, revealed its strategy to the firm's more than 14,000 advisors a couple of weeks ago on Thursday. So what's funny is, if it's positive for the firm and they think it's positive for people, why did it take a government ruling to kick this to the curb?
I think a lot of it just has to do with the culture. The kind of big brokerage house companies, that's how they were built, was on trading commissions. And if you're a client of one of these companies, that's kind of how you expect to pay for services. And this is a big change across the industry. I couldn't think of a better word than big, but you came up with one. Huge.
Yes.
Gargantuan. Monstrous. Earth-shaking.
Yes. Merrill clients are going to be able to receive retirement-related advice through their fee-based investment advisory program, of course. Clients wanting a brokerage option will still be able to make use of their other investing options, including Merrill Edge, which is a self-directed brokerage service. So you can pay commissions, but the discount...
Not to the advisor.
Right, yep, it's a discount commission to do it yourself. As well as, they, of course, like everybody else, are rolling out a robo-advisor service in early 2017.
And this is part of the confusing piece about it. The article talks about how challenging it would be to supervise... And I thought that this might be the case, right? From a supervision standpoint of brokers,
yeah.
How do you supervise some accounts that can be commission, some accounts that can be fee, some accounts that can't be commission, some accounts that have to be fee? And so what they're doing is they're just saying, we're just not doing commissions.
Yeah, compliance over at Merrill must have been a nightmare. Well, not just them. All the big firms must have been
a nightmare. All of them are going to be like that. And they just figured from a compliance standpoint, it was going to be a little bit more difficult. I'm interested to see, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, another company, I think it was Morgan, raised their account minimum.
That's right.
To work with an advisor to 750. And I kind of wonder if Merrill's going to go in that direction also. But now that since it's a fee – as opposed to commission, are they going to change that? Because last I'd heard they were kind of in that 250 to 500 range before you'd get to work with an advisor per account. So I think there's more to follow on this.
I was talking to a State Farm guy at an event that I was at this last weekend, and he was telling me that at least in his area, State Farm's just getting completely out of any of the financial planning business, going just back to the bare bones of insurance, mostly because of the fiduciary rule.
I have a great article I'm going to share with you. Maybe we can put it on a future show that I think will blow your mind about this particular thing.
Blow my mind, baby.
Blow your mind.
Next article comes to us from money.com. It's actually time.com/money. What's the best way to keep my retirement portfolio mix on track? This is by Penelope Wang. You know, it's funny. We've got Jeff Kleintop coming down to the basement talking about diversification, OG. So I thought this would be nice and congruent. But there's a question they asked Penelope, which was, a constant theme for retirement is to check your ratio of stocks and bonds to be sure you're on the right track. When I do that, should I be selling one and buying the other to balance, or simply changing my future allocations for contributions, or both? The answer here says it's just important to rebalance periodically. And I think we bring this up because we throw around this term rebalance, like people have heard of it and they know what we're talking about. I think it's a good day with Jeff coming down to talk about diversification, to talk about actually what rebalancing means.
This is a question we get all the time. Should I recommend new contributions to make my allocation correct? Should I sell some things and buy others to make my allocation correct? And I don't know that there's a blanket answer, because everybody's situation is going to be a little bit unique. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of volume, if you've got an account that has $10,000 and you're off by $400 and you're contributing $500 a month to it, well, you can probably get the rebalance done by just the next month's contribution.
Yeah.
If you have an account that has $500,000 in it and it's off by 10%, that's $50,000. That you're adding $500 a month to it, that you probably have to do, you know, some buys and sells to get back to the allocation.
It says, how often should you rebalance? And it says, that's a matter of debate, but generally less is more. And you've said that in the past too.
Less is more. Yep, absolutely.
However, it says you need to do it, and few investors bother to rebalance at all, which this article goes on to say can cause big problems in your portfolio over time. And I think what causes big problems, I think partly because you miss out on the opportunity for some nice gains. Because when you rebalance, you're automatically peeling off a part that's high, and you're automatically buying into something that's low.
Well, in the article, what it talks about where the miss happens, and this is the discipline part of investing that I think some people just kind of miss out on. It's not necessarily fun to rebalance, to sell something when it's riding high.
Right, right.
And you go, well, why would I want to sell that? Because if you don't, and then you get into 2008 again, then all those gains
gone,
get cut in half or gone.
And I remember that when I was an advisor, people would say, okay, Joe, what do you got today? I'm like, well, we're going to do this thing called rebalance. Okay, that sounds great. Like, in theory, sounds great, right? And they're like, okay.
Sure, rebalance. Yeah, how do I do that?
So which one are we going to sell? We're going to sell some of that one. You mean the good one? Why would we sell the good one? That's what they call it, the good one.
The good one.
Yes.
That's the good one.
Well, okay, you're the boss. What are we going to do with it? We're going to buy some of that. That's the bad one. That's the one that doesn't do anything. Yes, it does. It just hasn't in the last year, but it will. Yeah. Markets change. Yeah, good stuff. I will link to this. If you're new to rebalancing, you'll want to read this article on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. I think our big lessons are, number one, rebalance your portfolio, please and thank you. as mom taught us to say. And then number two, this whole fiduciary ruling, another big company, OG, making changes.
More changes coming.
There's a lot to come. Stay tuned. Jeffrey Kleintop is about to call in on Dad Shortwave, OG. He is the chief global investment strategist at this little company called Charles Schwab.
Never heard of him.
No, me neither. Mr. Kleintop is amazing. If you've seen him on CNBC before, and I'm sure that a lot of people listening have seen him, he's amazingly entertaining. He's a guy that can make complex things seem very, very simple. He's responsible for identifying, evaluating, and commenting on significant risks and opportunities in the world's capital markets, vital to investment decision-making. He is cited by the Wall Street Journal, that's a little publication, as, quote, one of Wall Street's best and brightest. And he's known for his key market insights. He's regularly quoted in, here we go, Wall Street Journal, Business Week, New York Times, frequent guest on CNBC, Bloomberg TV, PBS, and Fox Business News. Popular keynote speaker at investment conferences. But you know what? He today is at the investment conference in mom's basement. Let's say hello to Jeffrey Kleintop. And on my dad's shortwave, Jeffrey Kleintop joins us. Welcome to the party, man.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
You know, there is so much to know when it comes to international investing. It's funny, if you were the U.S.-based guy, I would think that'd be an easy job. How easy is it trying to keep up with all the events all over the world as a full-time job?
You know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I can't say it's easy, but there are so many things going on, whether it's geopolitics or it's the economic data or crazy moves in currencies or markets, you name it. There's always a lot going on. So it's sort of a bull market for fun and engaging things going. You know, it's never boring, I guess, is what I got to say.
Does that mean that you get to go check these places out, you know, ostensibly a business trip where you get to travel around the world? Tell me you're a jet setter, Jeff.
I am, actually. It's fantastic. You know, Charles Schwab has branches all over the world. And so I'm in Hong Kong, I'm in London. We've got operations in Australia, of course, all over the U.S. So all over, I get to travel, and it's a lot of fun to actually be in an economy that you're studying, that you're looking at the data, or you're examining the market and trying to understand investors' behavior. Actually sit down and talk to people. I get the opportunity to have dinner with folks, to present to them and have, you know, Q&A back and forth and really hear what they're excited about or what they're worried about or what they'd like to learn more about. And I find it's really informative and a lot better than just looking at some numbers on a screen.
Well, you wrote a piece recently that shows that although people like to travel, when it comes to their money, it seems like there's no place but like home.
Exactly right. It's amazing. Wherever I go, people tend to concentrate their stock market investments in their home country. And you may think, well, that's not a big deal. And I can point out that 75% of the money that people invest in the stock market here in the U.S. ends up in U.S. stocks. And you may say, well, that doesn't seem too weird. There's a lot of great companies in the U.S. To put 75% of your money doesn't seem too odd. But I can tell you it's the same thing in Spain or in Greece or in Israel or in Hong Kong. And so it is kind of odd how everyone wants to favor their home market because they're comfortable with it or they're closer to it. But it can mean they're not diversified. It's amazing how some countries can actually behave like just one sector of the stock market. My favorite example is Canada. Canada, our friends to the north, have a very diversified economy. In fact, their biggest stock market sector are the big banks, the financials. But their entire stock market behaves like one big energy ETF. It behaves like one big energy stock. And, you know, it goes up when oil prices are headed higher and comes down when oil prices are headed lower. Been doing that for 15 years. Kind of the only thing you need to know about Canada is which way oil prices are going. So the fact that Canadian investors, 75% of their money in Canadian stocks, means they've got a whole lot of energy exposure they might not even be aware of.
Is it as bad for us, though, with the diversified economy in the USA?
You know, the U.S. is a bit more diversified. But the amazing thing is the U.S. tracks tech stocks. The U.S., from a global perspective, behaves like one giant tech stock. And tech is our biggest sector. And so that makes some sense. But it is fascinating that even concentrating in as large and the biggest economy in the world, lots of great companies, we still tend to behave like just one big tech stock. And so even if you're concentrated in the U.S., or if you're concentrated in the U.S., you can have a lot more tech exposure than you realize. And that's been a good thing over the last 3, 5, 10 years. It hasn't always been a good thing. If we think back to the early 2000s, how painful that tech blow-up was after the big bubble of the late 90s. So, you know, looking forward, you want diversification in your portfolio, you've got to go global.
It seems like when we look at this, you're talking a lot about risk. Do we also miss out on some potential returns by not having more money maybe in emerging markets?
Well, that's a good point. You know, the emerging markets this year, 2016, have been amazing performers after a lot of folks just wrote them off after a few years of weaker performance. And yeah, you know, one of the amazing things about the emerging markets is that it's where 80% of the world's population lives. If we just look out a few years from now, just at the year 2020, middle-class spending will be higher. The dollar amount of middle-class spending, the percent of where it comes from, higher in China than it is in the U.S. And if you look at 10 years beyond that to 2030, way bigger in India even than it's going to be in China. And those two countries alone will make up 40% of middle-class spending versus just 7% for the U.S. So the world's consumer is definitely shifting to the emerging markets. We used to think of them as just a place where cheap t-shirts and toys get made. And truly, they are now becoming where all that stuff is bought. And so U.S. companies, global companies, tailoring their products and increasingly making them in these emerging markets. So it is a long-term trend and an attractive place to have some exposure in your portfolio. And this year's performance, where they're up, you know, a double-digit percentage, just shows that they can easily be overlooked and opportunities missed.
It's funny because as you talk about emerging markets, I just find that these places are not just fun investment places, they're fun to travel to. And I'd love to talk to you about specific economies, because if I'm somebody who's taking the kids to school or I'm just headed into work every day, I don't really know, Jeff, how world news affects investment opportunities, right? So back in the day, there was a lot of talk about Russia with investing. Now, whenever I hear about Russia, it seems like it's CNN and it's Vladimir Putin riding on a horse without a shirt on. Is Russia a good investment?
You know, Russia moves like energy stocks, a bit like Canada
okay.
does.
All
so
right.
If you're bullish on where oil prices are going, that's where that goes. Brazil, another big emerging market country, also moves with commodity prices, big agricultural and energy producer. By the way, there are some developed countries that behave that way too, like Australia or New Zealand, but it's primarily a lot of the emerging market countries. So that's an idea there. Often, if you're excited about where commodity prices may be headed in the next few years, on emerging market demand picking up, perhaps some of those areas may make some sense. Others are more driven by consumer spending in the rest of the world, or even financials. A lot of the biggest companies in many emerging market countries are actually their banks. And so as we start to see maybe the financial sector turn around, it's been a tough place to be for the last several years for a lot of good reasons. But maybe as long-term interest rates begin to rise in the coming years, that's often a good thing for banks. Remember, they lend money at longer-term interest rates. So even if short-term rates remain low, they can actually earn a bigger spread on each loan they're making. Could be good news for some of the emerging market countries out there.
Are there specific countries, though, if I'm looking at financials that I want to be in? Would that be the UK or, you know, I mean, I say Germany, I'm laughing about Deutsche Bank. But are there certain economies where I want to be? China?
From a financial standpoint, Japan is probably the country that behaves most like the financial sector,
okay.
Very dominated by financials. But Europe, by and large, is dominated by financials. You mentioned Deutsche Bank, and certainly it's had its troubles. It's a bit of a unique case, given that its troubles are driven by litigation rather than a problem with lending or credit or anything else going on in the Eurozone. So fortunately, most banks in Europe have actually done pretty well here, and we're leaders in the third quarter here. And now as we look into the fourth quarter, hopefully they can sustain those gains. So generally, when you're thinking about financials, it's a lot of Asia, including Japan, and then also Europe, where those are concentrated. Actually, the U.S. is one of the few countries of the world that's actually underweight financials relative to the rest of the world. So an interesting comparison.
Wow, that is surprising. If I'm a regular person driving down the road right now, how do I learn this stuff about my portfolio? Because I find this fascinating. And I'm sure for a lot of people, you know, when they think of Canada, they think of a beautiful place to visit, but they don't think of it as just one big energy sector. Do I look in the prospectus or where do I go?
You know, one of the most useful things to do, I think, is to take a look at a chart. I mean, it's so easy these days, whether you're talking about, you know, anywhere on the internet, looking at a chart and just trying to understand a little bit of what might have moved that market. Not just looking at the last year or two, but thinking about, okay, what do I know about what's happened in the world? Let's see, energy prices have come down. I know that because I saw it at the pump. Or, you know, perhaps there's been trouble in the financial sector with, you know, banks and those kind of issues around the financial crisis. And you can kind of take a look at charts for maybe different countries, different sectors, and maybe understand a little bit of what are the big macro drivers that even anyone, you know, in their regular go-about daily lives might be aware of. And that might help you understand what moves some of these markets. It's often not as technical as we think it is. And, you know, I try and write a lot on Schwab.com about a lot of these things and just connecting it with everyday life and helping people understand and empower to really make their own financial decisions and think through a lot of these things that may be moving some of the world's biggest markets. We often focus a lot on politics and some of the big economic data, but in fact, it's often the very common things that we notice every day that tend to be the biggest movers of some of the world's largest stock markets.
I'll link to some of your writing at Schwab.com, especially pieces that we used when we're talking about your portfolio being less diversified than you think, that type of thing. You know, we have a big election coming up, Jeff. How much do elections drive global markets?
Well, it's funny. It's actually more the other way around. So what we found is markets tend to have more of an impact on election outcomes than the other way, meaning if the stock market's doing really well, the incumbent tends to be reelected or the incumbent's party. And if it's not, well, then they face a pretty uphill battle. But there is a flip side to it as well. And this upcoming election in the U.S. certainly has some significant impact on a few areas. Probably the biggest area actually isn't so much how the candidates are different and what they might mean, but it's how they're the same. The biggest question I'm getting as I travel around the U.S. and around the world is, what about all these multinational companies I own in my portfolio that might now be subject to big trade tariffs, or what are we going to do? We've got two candidates who have been openly opposed to some of the free trade agreements and talking about renegotiating others. What does that mean for the companies I own that sell and manufacture around the world? And my answer to that is it's a bit overstated. We've seen this before. Presidential candidates love to bash trade agreements, and as Obama did in 2008, talked about renegotiating NAFTA. And here has instead put forth a number of new trade agreements. So it's often overstated a little bit. The other thing is businesses, and I'll end with this, have really gone a long way to locating their manufacturing increasingly where they sell. It's called localization. It's kind of globalization 2.0. You know, I was talking to Jeff Immelt at GE a few months ago at an event. He mentioned that GE used to have one plant for making locomotives. They now have seven distributed around the world where they sell. And it really cushions them, if you will, insulates them from perhaps any trade barriers that would come up or non-tariff barriers that could maybe limit their ability or impact their ability to sell around the world. So I think it far too much is being made over the anti-trade rhetoric we're seeing coming out of this election or even the Brexit or some of the other events we're seeing around the world. I think with those big large cap companies, you're probably still okay from a global sales perspective.
Well, that's good news. And personally, I just can't wait for the election to be over. I don't know about you.
You know, it's funny. In most countries around the world, election and campaigning they're limited. You get two weeks or a month to campaign, and then it's over. I think that the 2020 campaigns are probably going to start sometime in December of this year.
Oh, don't say that. Come on. I'm looking forward to December right now. Well, tell me one more thing. With all the world travel you get to do, Jeff, do you get to keep the frequent flyer miles?
I do. But honestly, I haven't been able to use many of them. I think I'm as rich as I can possibly be if we counted miles. I'm glad I'm not taxed on them.
Well, Jeff Kleintop from Charles Schwab, thanks for hanging out with us today.
My pleasure. I had a great time.
Hey everyone, it's Joe's mom's neighbor Doug here with the most exciting part of the show, your trivia. Because the esteemed Jeff Kleintop is here today, I thought an international question might be appropriate. So here we go. Now that the UK has voted to leave the European Union, how many member states are left? I'll be back with the new, more exclusive, non-UK European Union club count in just a minute.
Time for a quick timeout to pay the bills. And speaking of paying bills, the centerpiece of your entire bill paying and home operating budget is your checking account, isn't it? So why not have a good one? StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney can help you quickly compare checking, savings, and credit card options. Magnify Money. How'd they come up with that name? CEO Nick Clemens shares the story.
Well, I spent years working in banking, and every time we wanted to find a way to make a little bit more money, we would get some lawyers in the room, we would add some extra fine print, and that fine print would help us charge more money. And so what we wanted to do in Magnify Money is we wanted to be the magnifying glass to help go through the fine print, find the traps, and make it really easy for people to avoid them and just spend less money on banking.
Head to StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. The magnifying glass that saves people, on average, $450. We're also happy to be sponsored by SoFi. Find them at StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We've told you before, we tell you all the time about their low rates and flexible terms for student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. But we asked co-founder Dan Macklin how easy it is to apply. How easy is it, Dan?
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information, and then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So that's extremely quick and simple.
That takes a lot of hamsters to spin that wheel, Dan.
Yeah, we do a soft credit pull. We're running your credit in the background. But assuming that everything matches up, then it really is a 10-minute process for you. And then it's an instantaneous approval decision for the majority of folks.
To find out right now how much lower your interest rates can be, head to StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I.
Hi, everyone. It's Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, returning to save you from having to think anymore about this awesome trivia question. Before the break, I asked, how many member states are in the smaller, gentler European U now that the UK has exited the building? The answer? The European Union, which in its current iteration began in 1992, now is down to a cozy 27 member countries. However, rumor has it that some of the other countries now might leave, following the UK on its way out. On a related note, we've tried several times to vote OG out of the basement, but that guy doesn't take a hint. Maybe if we left a trail of almond joys up the basement stairs. Hey, there's an idea. See ya!
Oh, that is so gross. Almond joys? Doug doesn't, he's got the wrong bait. He's fishing for the wrong fish, man. Peanut M&Ms, clearly.
Is the peanut M&Ms because you can't have them at your house?
God, I love peanut M&Ms.
It doesn't that stink. You can't have them. Yeah. Thanks, by the way, to Jeff Kleintop for appearing on Dad Shortwave. You know, OG, I don't know if you were able to overhear that call, but I like
throwing all those almond joys in the trash.
I like this idea of the fact that different countries are like sector bets.
It's an interesting way to think about it. If you look at the predominant industry within the country, you can kind of get a feel for what might happen in that country based on how that industry is working at that present time.
I never thought about the U.S. economy and the technology sector being similar, but when I look at a chart, there's a decent degree of correlation.
There's some similarities there, yeah.
That guy might know what he's talking about, OG.
Maybe a smidge. We should see if he wants to call in some other time and tell us other cool tricks of the trade.
Maybe he could just take over the show.
That's what Doug would like, apparently.
Yeah. Hey, let's head over to our, we don't have a sponsor for this segment, hotline, so we're calling it the OG is taking clients, so it's your lucky day hotline. Head to stackybenjamins.com/letter O, letter G. stackybenjamins.com/OG if you want to set up an appointment to talk to I almost said to talk to Doug. That's funny. To talk to OG about becoming your last financial advisor. Is that better? Is that good?
Okay, I'll take it.
Today, up on the hotline, though, we have our good friend Patrick. Patrick's listened to the show for quite a while. Let's say hi to Patrick.
Hey, Joe and OG. So my wife and I do pretty good financially, and I've got a Roth IRA question for you. So we both have maxed out our 401ks for the year, and we were contributing to a Roth IRA at the beginning of the year, but we stopped since we thought we were going to exceed the income limits. Now, as we're trending towards the end of the year, we are definitely going to exceed the income limits. So my little sugar mama has really been bringing it home. My question is, before we hit January 1st of 2017, do we just remove that money from the Roth IRA account, or is there some weird form that we need to fill out before doing so? Because we don't want to get dinged for that. And we've probably put maybe two or three grand into that account. All right. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Congratulations on the sugar mama, by the way.
Yeah, I know all too well what that's like. So
that's fantastic.
Lock that down.
OG, is there a form that he has to fill out?
All right. So being a little tongue-in-cheek here, but does the U.S. government tax system require a form, is what he just asked. Does the financial industry require a form? Absolutely, they do. What you're looking for is the removal of excess contributions form. And so wherever your Roth IRA is housed, you will contact them and say, I want to remove my excess contribution. Now, you can wait until you file your taxes on this, by the way, just to confirm that you indeed are going to be well over, because remember, it's not just gross income, it's modified adjusted gross income. So there's some add backs and some subtractions there. So if you're just looking at the chart and you go, well, it's 170, I think we're going to hit 170. Remember, there, you know, it's modified AGI. But if you're really sure you're going to be well over it, you really hit the jackpot on the sugar mama deal, which I know I did in more than one way, sweetheart. Hugs and kisses.
Easy.
No, I'm talking about she's a great mom, too.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Not any of that other stuff you're talking about. That's for the young kids.
Yeah, that's
young
right.
Kids do that stuff.
Right.
Not those old folks. In any event, removal of excess contribution. Here's why you want to do it. Penalty. Penalty alert. I think we should have like a horn sound. Steve, can we get a siren? You know, like when you make a goal in hockey, the red light goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Penalty. If you do not remove your excess contributions, there's a penalty and it's cumulative. So if you forget about it in year one and still forget about it in year two, the penalty keeps on adding up as time goes on. So you definitely want to get that out before you file your taxes. Excess removal form. They will figure it out for you. Your custodian, whoever has the Roth IRA, will figure out the calculation and send you a tax bill for any interest or gain that you've made in the last year on that excess contribution.
Thanks for the question, Patrick. If you've got a question for the voicemail, it's stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And if you want to hook up with OG, stackybenjamins.com/OG. And that's to schedule an appointment to talk to him about becoming your financial planner. All right, let's go to the mailbag. Doug brought down the mail, and we've got a question from Alex about HSAs. He has an HSA through work, OG, and he says this may be more of a legal issue, so he's not sure if we can provide an answer, but it's worth a shot. I don't know if Alex has listened to the show. Can we provide an answer? If we teach anything,
kind of usually run around in a circle and not answer as much as we possibly can.
If we teach anything on this show, it was a huge accident, Alex. Where have you been? He says he has an HSA account through work, but the money's being deposited into a bank that he's not a fan of for a few reasons. He knows the credit union that's his normal banking institution, they have an HSA account type as well, and he'd much rather use that credit union to keep more of his accounts in the same area as well as get a better interest rate on his HSA. His payroll told him they only offer HSAs tied to that bank that he doesn't like. So here's the question. Is there anything he can do to force his employer to deposit the money he puts toward the HSA into the financial institution of his choice? Or is that just the way the world works? Or will he need to open a separate account with his credit union and transfer money to that account? He said that brings up another question. Can you transfer money in one HSA account into another HSA at a different financial institution? Great question, Alex. And it's funny because HSAs, OG, came around after I was out of the field. Largely, they were just starting to come around. So I don't know much about this. So hit me.
Hey, Alex, two quick answers for you on the HSA thing. Partially, you're right. This is up to your employer. So this is a benefit package that they offer. This is no different than your 401k. If they have a crappy 401k and you want to have your 401k somewhere else, the best you can do is petition your employer, you know, groundswell of feedback from other employees to kind of motivate management to look at other things. That's all you can do with that. You can't force them to contribute money to a plan outside of the contractual plan that they have. You are allowed to do a rollover once per year, and it's called a trustee to trustee transfer. You can do one of those a year. So as your HSA balance continues to grow and you want to move that over to your credit union, you could do that. There shouldn't be any penalty for doing that. But again, this is up to plan specific documents. If your plan doesn't allow those, you can't do it either. So plan documents can be more restrictive. One thing that you may consider, just because it's a bank that you don't particularly care for and the interest rate sucks, that's pretty true for just about everything. We had a comment a week or so ago about getting better interest rates on stuff.
Right.
They're just low. That's just all there is to it, you know, and you know, an extra tenth of a point on interest is not going to make the difference. But quite often with HSAs, they also include an option to invest a portion of that HSA, usually in index type products. Usually you can find some, you know, an S&P index or something like that. After you've reached the maximum out of pocket in that HSA, you can divert the rest of those funds into more longer term investment opportunities. And that may kind of quench your thirst there on having a little bit better investment return without having so much money sit in kind of some crappy returns.
Yeah, great question, Alex. Thanks for the answer, OG. You got a question for the mailbag. Send those to me, joe@stackingbenjamins.com.
Are you on fire?
I know. Did you see? Well, you saw I lit a candle because, God, you stink.
Well, I just saw smoke billowing in front of your face. And I meant literally on fire, not figuratively, but
this podcast is on fire. Hey, yeah,
you had to blow it out because it was so
speaking of
hot.
That, we are catching up on our reviews finally. But you know what? We're about to celebrate 400 episodes and we have 300 reviews. Mm. So let's issue a challenge. Let's try to catch up so that we have as many reviews as we have episodes. Would that make sense? 400 episodes, 400 reviews, you know, let's see if we can get that done. Team Basement Dwellers. See if we can do that.
It takes like 5 minutes.
It does. It takes no time. Helps us a ton. The Green Room, our side project podcast, where we talk about making this show, that still only has 12 reviews. 12. Yeah.
A little light.
Right. So we could use some help, gang. But thanks, everybody who sent in reviews. By the way, we are up to 300. We mentioned on Monday's show that we weren't there yet, and we are now. And you know what's funny, OG? I don't know which one came in first, because the way that I got these were backwards. So I saw Joseph. It says Joseph Hogue. I believe Joseph Hogue is a blogger. Email us. We're sending you a t-shirt. But also Nancy84VA. Nancy says, really happy to find this show. Never knew a finance show could be funny and informative. Lots of great guests keep it interesting. They're very good at explaining things to help you figure out what the best options will be for your own personal situation. Nancy's delusional. She thinks we're teaching something, OG.
We try our hardest.
Yeah, I love the feedback, Nancy, but come on. Really, this show, us helping you out with stuff? Come on. But that's fantastic. So both you guys, if Nancy, you and Joseph, you guys both give me your address. Email me, joe@stackybenjamins.com. And we're sending a t-shirt to both of them. How about that?
Smart idea.
Yes. And if you want Stacky Benjamin swag, it's really cool. Stackybenjamins.com/shirts to get yours. That's going to do it for today, man. Good stuff. Coming up on Friday, we've got another great roundtable. And then we are back here next week with another hit week of guests. We start off on Monday with Lisa Sugar, the big celebrity sites, Pop Sugar sites. If you're familiar with popsugar.com, which is not just about celebrities, but fashion. The person that created it, Lisa Sugar, coming down to the basement, talking about becoming an entrepreneur. You know, she started that OG as a side project. You know, we talk about side hustles and you're not making enough money. And it's a great career advice book. Power Your Happy is the name of her book. And we're going to talk to Lisa Sugar. And then on Wednesday, Lisa Peterson, who's a holistic wealth advisor. Lisa Peterson was at her doctor's office. And I'm not going to tell you what happened, but it changed her life. We're going to start with that story on Wednesday when we talk to Lisa. We'll see everybody, though, back here getting the cart ahead of the horse, as Mom says. We got half a week to go. See everybody back here on Friday, stacking more Benjamins. Take it away, Doug.
So what's the point of today's show? Well, first, Jeff Kleintop had a good point about diversification. When is the last time you looked at your international investments carefully? Maybe it's time for a little overhaul in that department. And second, if Merrill Lynch is abandoning commissions and IRAs, it's not going to be long, probably, before the other major firms also get in line. But the big lesson? Don't leave Almond Joys on the steps when Joe's mom brings down the laundry. Only bad things happen then. Trust me. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to Jeff Kleintop, Chief Global Investment Strategist at Charles Schwab, for joining us today. We'll link to Jeff's writing and to his Twitter handle so you can say hey at our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Special thanks to Patrick for writing in about his sugar mama on today's show. You know, I went looking for a sugar mama once. And in fact, after meeting a fantastic woman, I thought the first date went really, really well. So after about an hour, I texted her four times to tell her how much fun we had, how I loved her jokes, and how we should totally do this again, like maybe the next day. She never answered. I just don't get it. It's weird.
So a lot of the new stuff coming out television show-wise, I have not had any time to watch any movies because I've been really busy, which is fantastic. But I kind of want to watch some. I got a list. Like you were talking about last week or Monday, they're starting to pick up steam a little bit. We're starting to get some goodies kind of showing up in the box office. But I'm curious, have you watched any of that new Kiefer Sutherland show, Designated Survivor?
Well, I know you followed 24 forever, so and this is 24, isn't it? Is he Jack Bauer?
No.
Oh, he's not. He's not Jack Bauer.
This has nothing to do with anything.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought this was a 24 thing.
Spinoff. No. So this show is basically, it starts out, he's the Secretary of Urban Development. He is nobody, right, in the president's cabinet. And he's the designated survivor. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
So at the State of the Union, they have one cabinet member that's offsite, you know, in case something weird happens. And that weird thing happens. So the Capitol is attacked. Everybody's missing or dead. And now the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development becomes the president.
That's crazy.
And so all of it goes from there. So the first episode, before the first commercial break, puts that all there. And then it backs up 12 hours before that. So you get to see the beginning part of that day.
Got it.
And there's some interesting twists that happen in the beginning part of the day that affect the evening there. And now it looks like they're going almost day by day. So the third episode I just watched on Hulu the other day, And the third episode is kind of his third or fourth day. So there's still no Congress. There's one person who survived because Congress has a designated survivor, too, apparently. And now it's turned a little political, right? So the news people are trying to find out, you know, who this guy is and is he qualified to be president and all this other like there's a choice. You know, there's no Senate. There's no Supreme Court. There's no. And so here's. I'm just going to call him Jack Bauer, but he's not Jack Bauer. He's different. He's a much different personality. He's very meek. He's very mild. And he's trying to find himself and fold himself into what it means to be a president, right? He's scared. He doesn't know what he's doing. He has no people around him that he trusts. It's kind of interesting so far. I hope that it doesn't turn too political. There's already been, you're going to love this. There's already been the message just smashed in your face about this. You know, they're trying to pick on, they're doing the terrorist thing. It was a terrorist attack and so on and so forth. And they're hammering home. At one point in time, he says, you know, I don't think war is the answer to all of our country's problems. That's how not that we don't have to unite the country through war. So that's kind of the message, right? Is get hammered in your face. So, yeah. So, you know, good, bad or ugly. I know you hate that. So I want to make you aware of it. But I'm curious if anybody else has any thoughts about it. I think it's decent so far. That's the only show I've been able to watch of the new ones. But
I'm doing season three of Peaky Blinders right now. Which Peaky Blinders we talked about before. If you haven't watched season one and two of Peaky Blinders, fantastic. If you take The Sopranos, put them in 1930s, 1920s England, that's Peaky Blinders. And created by Harvey Weinstein. That guy's won so many awards for great movies and great television, mm-hmm. like his production company. Fantastic stuff. But season three is the season where it goes from being based on new characters and like you're exploring the characters to now, you know, the characters and it's really plot based and the plot is really, really weird. And so I feel like a completionist, you know what I mean? Like I'm finishing it because I feel like I have to, which is a little disappointing. We had a discussion just a few days ago on Twitter about Stranger Things though, after Stranger Things was a big part of the Saturday Night Live episode a couple weeks ago. And you will love that show.
I don't like sci-fi stuff at all.
I still think you'll like it. There's
who's the main actor? I don't like him either.
The main actor. It's his name's David Harbour.
Yeah, that's not who I'm thinking of then. Never mind.
Yeah,
maybe I saw a different commercial.
Yeah, Winona Ryder's in it. Like I said, Matthew Modine's in it. So good stuff though. So that's what I'm doing. I just heard Dan at SoFi was telling me that I need to watch a show. People write to me all the time and tell me what shows I need to watch. So I've got a really long list. Have you ever heard of the show Night Of?
Have not, no.
HBO? He tells me Night Of on HBO. Of course, Lisa Sugar, when she and I were talking about her coming on the show, Lisa Sugar from Pop Sugar, she was saying that iRobot, mm-hmm. you've seen that show. She said that
the show or the movie?
No, the TV show with the dude, the weird-looking dude, Mr. Robot.
Then I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, Mr. Robot. That's on the USA Network, but that won the Golden Globe this last year for Best Television Series Drama. So, you know, the one that Downton Abbey's won and Mad Men and all those. So, Breaking Bad won. Mr. Robot won it this year. All right, that's going to do it. We haven't talked TV in a long time. That's good. We'll see everybody back here.
I'm good for something.
Yeah. We'll see everybody back here on Friday.